bedroom and kitchen with three tiny bedrooms and a bathroom upstairs. The bath is far from luxurious, but it has a window that opens to the roof over the kitchen. This window was my escape route all through high school whenever I was grounded, and I was grounded a lot. We were all seated at the dining room table. Diesel, Carl, my mother, my father, and my Grandma Mazur. My Grandma Mazur moved in with my parents when Grandpa Mazur bought a one-way ticket to God's big theme park in the sky. Grandma buys her clothes at the Gap, her sneakers at Payless, and her Metamucil at the supermarket. She has short gray hair and more skin than she needs. "Isn't this nice?" Grandma Mazur said, setting the green bean casserole in the middle of the table, taking her place opposite me. "This feels just like a party. Can't hardly remember the last time Diesel was here. It feels like ages. And anyway, it's always a treat to have a handsome man in the house." My father stopped shoveling slabs of pot roast onto his plate, his lips compressed and his eyes fixed on his knife, as if he was contemplating carving something other than cow. He mumbled a few unintelligible words, his color returned to normal, and he moved on to the mashed potatoes. This happened at least 5 times during a normal evening meal with my grandmother and father. He thought my grandmother was a trial. I was sitting to my father's left, and Diesel was next to me. My grandmother was to my father's right, and Carl was next to her. My mother was at the other end of the table. My father looked up in search of gravy, and for the first time, spotted Carl. My sister Valerie has a flock of kids who regularly visit with my parents, and as it turns out, size-wise, it's a fairly easy transition to go from kids to a monkey. Carl was sitting in my niece's booster chair with a white napkin tied around his neck.
"There's a monkey at the table," my father said.
My mother looked at my father and looked at Carl, and then she belted back something I suspected was straight whiskey, cleverly disguised as iced tea. Grandma spooned some green beans and applesauce onto Carl's plate.
"Stephanie's babysitting the little guy," she told my father. "His name is Carl."
Carl's attention was fixed on his beans. He picked one up, smelled it, and ate it.
"Do you want pot roast?"
Grandma asked Carl. Carl shrugged. Grandma put a slice of pot roast on Carl's plate and added mashed potatoes. Carl's eyes lit up at the sight of mashed potatoes. He grabbed a handful and shoved them into his mouth.
"We don't eat mashed potatoes with our hands,"
Grandma said to Carl. Carl stopped eating and looked around, confused. He rolled his lips back and did a forced monkey smile at Grandma.
"We use our fork," Grandma said, holding her fork for Carl to see.
Carl picked his fork up and looked at it. He smelled it and touched a prong with his bony monkey finger. Grandma scooped some potatoes up with her fork and ate them.
"Yum," Grandma said to Carl. "Good potatoes."
Carl stuck his fork into his potatoes, raised a glob to his mouth, and the potatoes slid off the fork onto the floor.
"Eee,"
Carl said.
"Don't worry about it," Grandma said to Carl. "It happens to me all the time."
Carl took a second shot at it with the same result.
"Maybe you want to skip the potatoes," Grandma said.
Carl's mouth dropped open, and his eyes went wide with horror. He shook his head. No! He wanted his potatoes. He very carefully, very deliberately raised a forkful of potatoes to his mouth, and at the last minute, disaster. The potatoes dropped onto the floor. Carl threw the fork across the room, jumped onto the table, and ran off with the bowl of mashed potatoes. There was a collective gasp from everyone but Diesel, who obviously required more than a monkey stealing potatoes to make him suck air. Diesel scraped his chair back and stood.
"I'm on it."
Moments later, Diesel returned with Carl and the empty potato bowl.
"Who would have thought a monkey could eat all those potatoes?" Grandma said.
Carl stuck his tongue out and gave Grandma the raspberries. And then he gave her the finger. My grandmother gave Carl the finger back. My mother took another belt of whatever amber-colored liquid was in her water glass. My father had his head bent over his food, but I think he was smiling. "Carl needs a time out," I told Diesel. "Put him in the bathroom upstairs." Grandma watched Diesel leave the room.
"He's a big one," she said. "He's a real looker, too, and he has a way with monkeys." It was almost 8 when I finished helping my mom with the dishes. Diesel was in the living room with my dad, slouched in a chair, watching a ball game. Carl was still in the bathroom. "Time to go," I said to Diesel. "If we stay any longer, I'll eat more pineapple upside-down cake."
"Will that be a bad thing?"
"It will be tomorrow when I can't zip my jeans." Diesel smiled and looked down at my jeans, and it was clear he wouldn't mind if I couldn't zip them. "One of us has to get Carl," I said. Diesel hauled himself out of the chair.
"I guess that would be me."
He ambled off, and moments later he called from upstairs.
"Got a problem here."
I found Diesel standing in the doorway to an empty bathroom. "Where's Carl?" I asked.
"Dunno," Diesel said, "but the window is open. It was closed and locked when I put Carl in here."
I went to the window and looked out. No Carl. "I used to escape through this window all the time when I was in high school," I said. "What are we going to do?"
"We're going to check out Scanlon's apartment."
"What about Carl?"
"Easy come, easy go," Diesel said.
"Maybe you can sniff him out. Look for his ectoplasm or something. Follow his sensory imprint."
"Sorry, I don't do monkeys."
"Well, that's just peachy. That's fine." I threw my hands into the air and stomped off to the stairs. "Don't help. Who needs you anyway? I'll look for him myself." Diesel followed after me.
"I didn't say I wouldn't help. I just said I didn't think I could tune into monkey ectoplasm."
I stopped at the front door and yelled that I was leaving. "Thanks for dinner," I said. My mother came to the door with a bag of leftovers. "Here's for lunch." My grandmother was with her. "Where's Carl?"
"He went on ahead," I told her. "We're gonna catch up with him later."
We slowly drove around the block, but didn't see Carl. We parked and walked a 4-block grid, including alleyways. No Carl.
"Are you getting anything?" I asked Diesel.
"Yeah, I'm getting tired of walking around looking for a wise-ass monkey."
"I feel responsible. Susan trusted me to take care of Carl until she came home."
"Honey, Susan's never coming home. She just dumped her monkey on you."
"You don't know that for sure."
"True. I was putting myself in Susan's place."
He draped an arm around my shoulders and pulled me into him.
"Here's my deal. If you snoop around Scanlon's apartment with me, I'll come back and look for Carl in the morning."
"Deal."
Connie had listed Scanlon's address as 2206 Niley Circle in Hamilton Township. I was familiar with Niley Circle. It was part of a large townhouse condo complex off Clockner Boulevard. I found the complex and parked in the lot. Diesel and I got out and studied the cluster of narrow townhouses in front of us. Easy to find Scanlon's, since the door was sealed with yellow crime scene tape. Diesel ripped the tape off and opened the door.
"How did you do that?" I asked him. "How did you just turn the knob and open the door?"
"I don't know. It's a gift. I can flush a toilet without touching the little lever, too."
"Really?"
Diesel grinned down at me.
"You are so gullible."
I narrowed my eyes at him.
"You're scum."
"It's okay," Diesel said, planting a kiss on the top of my head. "It's cute."
We were standing in a small foyer in the dark. This was a 2-story townhouse, so presumably there were stairs somewhere, plus furniture and a kitchen and all the things one ordinarily finds in a home. Unfortunately, I couldn't see any of them because it was pitch black. I felt Diesel leave my side, and I could hear him moving around the room.
"Can you see where you're going?" I asked him.
"Yep. Can't you?"
I blew out a sigh.
"No."
"Maybe you need to eat more carrots or blueberries or something."
I took a couple steps forward and fell over a large unseen object. Diesel crossed the room, picked me up, and set me on my feet.
"Stand here and don't move and let me look around," Diesel said.
I listened to him search the condo for what seemed like forever and a day. My eyes adjusted to the absence of light enough to see a few large shapes, but never enough to make out detail. From time to time I'd see a pen light flick on, and moments later it would flick off. Diesel could see in the dark, but not perfectly.
"This is boring," I said to him.
"I'm almost done."
"Are you finding anything helpful?"
"He was planning on leaving the country. He had a suitcase packed, and his passport is out on his dresser. No travel itinerary. There are computer connections, but no computer. And Wolf's been here. The place reeks of him.
The crime lab might have taken the computer.
It's possible. Or a wolf might have taken it.
Diesel wrapped an arm around me and steered me to the foyer and out the front door. We made a half-hearted attempt to reattach the crime scene tape, but it had lost most of its sticking power, so we left it on the ground and scuttled back to my car. Halfway home, my phone rang.
"Carl's here," Grandma Mazur said. I went to answer the doorbell, and there he was on the porch looking all dejected.
"Where is he now?"
"He's here in the kitchen eating cookies."
"I'll be right there." 30 minutes later, Diesel walked into my apartment, went straight to the couch, and flipped the ball game on. Carl scampered up beside him.
"Make yourself at home," I said. "I'm gonna pretend that wasn't sarcasm," Diesel said. "I don't suppose you have any chips."
I brought him a bag of corn chips and a jar of salsa. I took a chip for Rex and dropped it into his cage along with a baby carrot. I put my mother's leftover bag in the fridge, and I shuffled back to the couch.
"I'm going to bed," I said to Diesel. "Alone, and I expect to wake up alone."
"You bet."
I looked down at Carl.
"And I expect you to behave yourself."
Carl did a palms up and shrugged. Chapter 6. I woke up with a heavy arm across my chest. Diesel. I knew from past experiences that Diesel didn't fit on my couch and wasn't the sort of guy to tough it out on the floor, so I'd taken the precaution of going to bed dressed in t-shirt and running shorts. Diesel shifted next to me and half-opened his eyes.
"Coffee," he murmured.
I slithered out from under him, rolled out of bed, and stepped over the clothes he'd left on the floor, including seafoam green boxers with palm trees and hula girls. I used the bathroom and shuffled into the living room where Carl was watching the news on television. I got the coffee going and fed Rex. I wasn't sure what monkeys ate in the morning, so I gave Carl a box of Fruit Loops. Diesel ambled into the kitchen and poured himself a mug of coffee.
"What have we got to eat?"
he asked. "Carl's eating the Fruit Loops, so that leaves leftovers from last night, peanut butter, hamster crunchies, and half a jar of salsa. Looks like you ate all the chips."
"I shared with Carl."
He retrieved the leftover bag from the refrigerator and dumped it on the counter. Pot roast, gravy, green bean casserole. No mashed potatoes. He put it all on a plate and nuked it.
"There's enough here for two."
I sipped my coffee. "I'll pass." Diesel dug into the mountain of food and ate it all.
"It's not fair," I said. "You ate tons of food. Why aren't you fat?"
"High rate of metabolism and clean living."
"What are you doing today?"
"I thought I'd hang out," Diesel said.
"You and Carl?"
"Yeah."
Carl gave Diesel a thumbs up. "Well, I'm a working girl," I told him. "I'm gonna take a shower and go catch a bad guy."
"Knock yourself out," Diesel said. "If you get a line on Munch, let me know."
Lula was on the couch in the bonds office when I walked in. She was wearing a pink sweatsuit and sneakers, and she was holding a box of tissues. She didn't have any makeup on, and her hair was somewhere between rat's nest and exploded canary. "What's up?" I asked.
"I've died is what's up," Lula said. "I got the flu back. I woke up this morning and I could stop sneezing, and my eyes are all puffy, and I feel like crap."
"Maybe it's an allergy," I said to her.
"I don't get allergies. I've never been allergic to anything."
"How'd it go with Tank last night? Did you set a new date for the wedding?"
"I decided December 1st is a good time on account of it'll be easy to remember for anniversaries."
"That was okay with Tank?"
"Yeah. He had his eyes closed when I told him, but I'm pretty sure he was listening."
Lula sneezed and blew her nose.
"I swear this just came on me. One minute I'm doing the nasty, and the next thing I got the flu again."
"Maybe you're allergic to Tank," Connie said.
"I gotta get my numbers done," Lula said. "I think there's something wrong with my juju. I'm gonna call Miss Gloria. This just isn't right."
I pulled Gordo Bolo's file out of my bag. "I'm gonna look in on Mr. Bolo. According to his file, he works for Greenblatt Produce on Water Street."
"I'll go with you," Lula said. "I heard about Greenblatt. That's a big fruit distributor. I could get an orange or a grapefruit for my bad juju while we're there, and I'll call Miss Gloria from the car."
We piled into the Jeep, and I took Hamilton driving toward Broad Street. I had my top up, but none of the windows zipped in. It was the end of September, and Trenton was enjoying a last-ditch warm spell.
Hello? Lula said into her phone. This here's Lula, and I need to talk to Miss Gloria. It's an emergency. I'm sick, and I think it's my juju, and I need my numbers done right away before I might die or something.
Lula disconnected and dropped her phone into her purse.
I hate being sick. No one should ever be sick. And if they do have to be sick, there should never be mucus involved.
I didn't want to hear any more about mucus, so I punched the radio on, found a rap station for Lula, and blasted it out. By the time I rolled to a stop in front of Greenblatt Produce, Lula was on a rant over my radio.
You can't play rap on this cheap-ass radio, she said. There's no bass. This is like Alvin and the Chipmunks do Jay-Z. On the other hand, your open-air car got my head cleared out. I can breathe. I don't even feel a sneeze coming on.
Greenblatt Produce was housed in a large cement block warehouse with a loading dock in the rear and a small windowless office in the front. There were four desks in the office, and they were occupied by women who looked like Connie clones.
What?
One of them said to me. I'm looking for Gordo Bolo.
Oh, damn. What did he do now?
He forgot his court date. I represent his bail bondsman, and I need to get him rescheduled.
I guess it could be worse, she said.
Oh, boy, Lula said to me. This guy's in deep doo-doo and he got worse visitors than us.
He's in the back, the woman said. Go through this door behind me. He's probably sorting tomatoes.
Lula and I entered the warehouse, and I showed her a photo of Gordo.
He looks real familiar, Lula said. I know him from somewhere. Maybe I knew him in a professional manner from when I was a hoe. No, wait, that's not it. Now that's gonna drive me nuts. I hate when this happens. Okay, I got it. He looks like Curly from the Three Stooges, same bowling ball head and everything. No wonder his wife divorced him. Who'd want to be married to a man with a head like a bowling ball?
Have you been taking cold medicine?
Maybe I had a couple hits this morning for medicinal purposes, Lula said.
I think you should wait in the car.
What? I'm not waiting in no car. I want to see the guy with the bowling ball head.
Fine, but don't say anything.
My lips are sealed. See what I'm doing? I'm zipping them and locking them. And look at this. I'm throwing away the key.
Lula sneezed and farted.
Oops. Excuse me, Lula said. I thought I was done sneezing. Good thing we're in this big warehouse with all this rotten fruit.
I took a giant step away from Lula and scanned the room. I walked down an aisle formed from crates of iceberg lettuce, turned the corner, and found Bolo offloading a pallet of tomatoes. Gordo Bolo? I asked.
Who wants to know?
We want to know, Lula said. Who the heck do you think?
I gave Bolo my card. I represent your bail bondsman, I told him. You missed your court date and you need to reschedule.
The whole thing is bogus, he said. My foot got stuck on the accelerator.
You run over that guy twice, Lula said.
Yeah, my foot got stuck twice. It was an accident.
It really doesn't matter, I said to him. You'll have a chance to explain all that if you'll just come with me to get a new date.
I can't go now. I'm working.
These look like real nice tomatoes, Lula said.
And then she sneezed and farted again.
Cripes, lady, Bolo said. You just cut the cheese on the tomatoes.
I didn't do no such thing, Lula said. I was facing the other direction.
She turned and looked behind her.
I laid one on these grapefruits from Guatemala. And anyways, it's not my fault. I got bad juju going. I'm waiting on a call from Miss Gloria.
This won't take long, I said to Bolo.
I'm not coming with you. Go away. Leave me alone.
I gotta get out of here, Lula said. There's something in here making my nose twitch.
Go out to the car. I'll be there in a minute.
You sure you don't need me? Lula asked.
I'm sure. Bolo went back to sorting tomatoes. Listen up, I said to him. You are required by law to return to the court, and I'm authorized to use force if necessary.
Oh, yeah? Force this, he said.
And he hit me square in the forehead with the tomato. I turned and splat! I took another in the back of the head. By the time I reached the door, I'd taken at least three more tomatoes.
Uh-oh, a Connie clone said when I staggered into the office. Looks like you pissed Gordo off. That man could use some anger management.
I'll be back, I told her. How late does he work?
He'll be here until 4.
I left the office and settled myself behind the wheel of the Jeep.
What the Sam Hill happened to you? Lula wanted to know.
Bolo needs anger management.
I'd go shoot him or something for you, but I'm waiting on Miss Gloria.
I wheeled out of the lot, turned onto Broad, and Miss Gloria called Lula back.
Yeah?
Lula said to Miss Gloria.
Well, I asked her when she disconnected.
It's my moons. Miss Gloria ran my numbers, and they didn't look so good. So then she did my chart, and it turns out my moons are all screwed up.
So, I just gotta wait it out.
She said I need to be extra careful during this time and not make any big decisions on account of they could be life-changing and I could decide the wrong thing.
Because of your moons?
Yeah, and we're on the cusp of something right now, but cell reception wasn't good, so I didn't get it all.
I parked curbside at the office and followed Lula through the front door.
Oh, my God, Connie said. What happened? Is that blood?
Tomatoes.
Gordo Bolo had issues with taking a ride with us, Lula said.
I need cuffs and pepper spray and a stun gun, I told Connie.
You haven't got any? She lost them when someone stole her purse at the mall last week, Lula said. I was with her. One minute we were in the food court eating pizza, and next thing she didn't have no purse. Lucky she just paid for the pizza, and she had her wallet in her pocket, or she wouldn't have no credit cards.
Take whatever you need, Connie said. I got myself outfitted and walked outside into the midday sunshine. A black Porsche Turbo slid to a stop behind my Jeep. Ranger angled out from behind the wheel and stood hands on hips looking me over.
Babe, Ranger said,
and he almost smiled. Ranger dresses in black. The rest of him comes in varying shades of brown. Silky, dark brown hair, light brown skin, and brown eyes that are more often than not hidden behind mirrored sunglasses. He's 3 months older than I am, and years ahead in life experience. He's a security expert and part owner of Rangeman, a protective services company located in a stealth townhouse in Center City. Tomatoes, I said by way of explanation.
Do you need help?
No, but thanks for asking.
Diesel is back, Ranger said.
Yes, how did you know?
I woke up with a migraine this morning.
Ranger picked a chunk of tomato out of my hair.
Word on the street is that you're looking for Munch, and Munch is looking for pure barium, and he's willing to pay serious money. There are a couple vendors who deal in this sort of thing, Solomon Cuddles and Doc Wiener. If you watch one of these guys, you might run into Munch. You can find Cuddles at the mall somewhere between the food court and the Gap. Wiener operates out of the Sky Social Club on Stark. Don't go in there alone. In fact, don't go in there at all.
Why would Munch want barium?
I don't know. It's commonly used in X-ray imaging, and it's useful in making certain kinds of superconductors. I'm sure it has other uses, but I'm not a barium expert.
A shiny black SUV rolled to a stop behind Ranger's Porsche. Tank was in Rangeman black fatigues behind the wheel, and Hal was next to him.
I have to go, Ranger said. Try not to stand too close to Diesel. He has some bad enemies. You don't want to get caught in the crossfire.
Chapter 7 Diesel opened the door to my apartment before I had a chance to plug my key in. Did you feel my sensory imprint approaching? I asked him.
No, I was looking out the window and I saw you pull into the parking lot. What's with the tomatoes?
Uncooperative FTA. I tried to take him down in a produce warehouse.
If we put some mayo on you, I could eat you for lunch. Which reminds me, there's no food here.
That's because you and your monkey have eaten it all.
Hey, he's not my monkey, Diesel said.
Speaking of the monkey, where is he?
I think he's in the bathroom.
I heard the toilet flush, the bathroom door banged open, and Carl walked into the living room. He waved at me, climbed onto the couch, and remoted the television on. Did you wash your hands? I asked him. He held his hands above his head and gave me the finger. He's not normal, I said to Diesel.
And?
I need to take a shower.
I'm going to use your Jeep to do some shopping. Do you want anything special for lunch?
Anything but tomatoes. My keys are in my bag in the foyer.
Thanks, but I don't need keys.
A half hour later, I pulled my clean hair into a ponytail and dressed in jeans and a black V-neck stretchy T-shirt. Diesel was still out, so I checked in with Morelli. How's it going? I asked.
Would you consider getting married and moving far away from my family? Maybe France or Phoenix?
Not working out with your brother?
I'm locking my gun in my car when I get home, so I'm not tempted to shoot him. He's an even bigger slob than I am. I've got empty beer cans all over the house, and he's only been with me for 24 hours. Last night I took him bowling, and he hit on everything that moved and was remotely female. And by the time we got home, he was crying because he missed his wife. Crying! Then he watched television until 3 in the morning and charged 2 porn films on my cable account.
You need to talk to him.
My brother? Are you kidding?
Is his wife showing any signs of reconciliation?
Not so far. But my mother said she'd make me a tray of lasagna and come over to clean my house if I kept him another day.
Are you going to keep him?
Yeah, he's my brother.
Call me when he leaves.
He'll be the first to know.
The locks tumbled on my front door, and Diesel pushed his way in, arms wrapped around bags of food.
Food shopping isn't my favorite thing, Diesel said. I wouldn't do it for anyone but you.
How do you eat if you don't shop?
People feed me.
He pulled a couple subs out of a bag and tossed one to me.
Women think I'm adorable.
Adorable?
Maybe adorable is a stretch.
I unwrapped my sub and took a bite. I have a line on Munch. He's looking for barium, and there are only two vendors in the area, Solomon Cuddles and Doc Wiener.
What would Munch want with barium?
I don't know, I said. I don't know anything about barium.
It's a heavy metal. Hard to find in pure form because it oxidizes when it's exposed to air. That's all I remember from Chemistry 101.
Carl walked into the kitchen and did a gesture that said, "What about me?" Diesel handed Carl a bag with apples, oranges, bananas, and grapes.
I got you fruit.
Carl looked at the fruit and gave Diesel the finger.
Dude, Diesel said, I spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia. Monkeys eat fruit.
Carl jumped onto the counter and pawed through the remaining food bags. He found a box of cookies and took it back to the couch. You'll rot your teeth, I told Carl. You get diabetes.
Do you know where to find Wiener and Cuddles? Diesel asked.
Yes. He finished his sub and grabbed a banana.
Let's roll.
What about Carl? Diesel looked in on Carl.
Are you okay here by yourself?
Carl vigorously nodded his head and gave Diesel a thumbs up. I chose to watch Doc Wiener because the mall felt unwieldy. Too many people, too much space. I couldn't see myself looking for a guy named Cuddles who was walking around dealing heavy chemicals out of a briefcase. Not that I was excited about staking out Stark Street. It was affectionately known as the Combat Zone, and it lived up to its name on a daily basis. In order to better fit in with the local atmosphere, Diesel was driving a black Cadillac Escalade with titanium wheel covers, dark-tinted windows, and multiple antennae. I didn't ask where he got it. We were parked half a block down and across the street from the Sky Social Club, and we looked like your average contract killer neighborhood drug dealer in our badass gas guzzler.
Do you know what Doc Wiener looks like? Diesel asked.
No. Does it matter? Diesel pushed his seat back and stretched his legs.
Just curious.
What do you think goes on inside this social club? Diesel looked across the street.
Business transactions, card games, prostitution, the usual.
Have you ever been in a social club like this? Diesel nodded.
They're the same the world over. They're grungy hangouts for crime families and their retinue of suck-ups and stooges.
There are a couple social clubs in the burg, but most of the men are recovering from hip replacements and are on oxygen.
The golden years, Diesel said.
The Sky Social Club was housed in a narrow, three-story building, squished between a butcher shop and a coin-op laundromat. The front door to the club was wooden and weathered. The windows had blackout shades drawn. Overall, the appearance was grim. Two young guys went into the club. Minutes later, one came out with a folding chair. He set the chair by the door, lit up, and sat down. An hour later, we were still watching, but nothing was happening. No one was going in, and no one was going out. We don't need two people to do this. I should take off and watch the guy at the mall, I said to Diesel.
Give me a break. You just want to go shopping.
I rolled my eyes so far into the top of my head I almost went unconscious, and I did a huge snort of indignation. This all in spite of the fact that he was right. You are so annoying, I said.
I try my best.
Tell me again why I need to sit here with you.
If I stay here alone and Wolf shows up instead of Munch, he'll sniff me out and vanish. And then he might not come back and we'll have lost our lead. The real question is, why do I have to sit here with you? I could be taking a nap in your nice comfy bed right now.
Good grief.
Don't you want to know why I'm here? Diesel asked.
No. He grinned at me and tugged at my ponytail.
I'm here to protect you so you don't get hurt in this bad neighborhood.
I didn't know how to react to this. I was sort of offended, but at the same time, grateful. And deep down inside, I knew it was bullshit. He was here hoping Wolf would show up.
Did you buy that?
Diesel asked. Partially. I slouched lower in my seat and watched the sidewalk across the street. A man came out of the bar at the end of the block and walked toward us, head down. His hair was braided and shoulder length. He looked to be in his late 20s, slim, average height. He was wearing work boots and jeans and a dirt-smudged t-shirt. He got even with us and picked his head up to check out a passing car. Holy cow, it was Hector Mendez. He was in my dead file. He failed to appear for court 6 months ago, and I was never able to find him. And then someone said he was dead, shot in a gang thing. I know that guy, I said to Diesel. I looked for him for months and finally gave up. I grabbed cuffs and pepper spray out of my bag, shoved them into my jeans pockets, and bolted from the car. Diesel asked if I needed help, but I hit the ground running. No time for small talk. I knew the instant Mendez saw me, he'd take off. He was a small-time drug pusher who was constantly in and out of jail, and this wasn't the first time I chased him down. I was halfway across the street running flat out when he spotted me. His eyes went wide, and it was easy to read his lips. Oh, fuck, Mendez said. Stop, I yelled. I want to talk to you. Sorry, he said. I gotta go. I'm in a hurry. I never broke stride, and I had momentum, but he was a better runner. He had long legs and a lot of motivation. We rounded the corner, and he turned down a service road that intersected the block. There were cars parked behind businesses and rooming houses. I saw a sign for the rear entrance to the laundromat, and suddenly Mendez stopped short. I didn't bother to question his reason. I took a flying leap and tackled him, taking him down to the ground. We rolled around cussing and clawing, my knee connected with his gonads, and that was the end of the rolling around. I cuffed him and sprang to my feet, feeling like I'd just won the calf roping competition at the county fair. I'm gonna sue, Mendez said. My privates are injured. This here's some kind of brutality. I was breathing heavy, trying to get a grip, and then I saw the reason Mendez stopped running. He'd come face to face with Wolf. At least, I was pretty sure it was Wolf. He was almost as tall as Diesel, but not quite as solid. His hair was black and shoulder length, swept away from his face in waves. His skin was pale and unearthly, like moonlight reflecting off still water. He was shockingly handsome, and his face was disturbingly devoid of expression. He was wearing black dress boots, black slacks, and a lightweight black cashmere sweater with the sleeves pushed up to his elbows. He had an expensive watch on his left wrist, and he had a narrow black metal bracelet on his right wrist. He was standing beside a black Ferrari, and he was looking past me. I glanced over my shoulder and saw Diesel standing about 20 feet behind me, relaxed, looking amused.
Walk away, Wolf said to Diesel.
Diesel shook his head no. His mouth still held a very small smile, but his eyes were hard. Wolf moved close to me, wrapped his hand around my arm, and I felt a buzz of electricity run from his hand to my fingertips.
Get in the car, he said.
No!
I could snap your neck.
And I could shove your nuts into your small intestine with my knee. This was absolute bravado on my part. It was one thing to sort of accidentally on purpose connect with Hector Mendez. Kneeing Gerwolf Grimoire would be a whole other ballgame. He was flat-out scary, and he radiated power, and I was pretty much frozen to the spot. What I knew for sure was that it would be a huge mistake to get into the car. I was guessing women went into his car in a lot better shape than they came out.
Release her, Diesel said.
Wolf's voice was low and silky, wind whispering in the trees.
I won't tolerate interference in my business. If necessary, I'll destroy you and everyone associated with you.
Diesel's posture was relaxed, no fear visible. I have a job to do. Nothing personal, but I will do it.
We'll take this up some other day, Wolf said.
He released my arm and stepped away from me. There was a blast of heat and a flash of fire, and when the smoke cleared, Wolf was gone. The car was still there. Diesel was hands on hips, looking disgusted. He gave his head a small shake.
Mr. Hollywood.
I didn't see nothing, Mendez said, still on the ground.
I don't know what just happened, and I didn't see it.
I made a move to the car, and Diesel pulled me back.
You don't want to touch Wolf's car,
he said. You never know what might happen.
I processed Mendez and returned to Diesel. He was parked in the public lot across the street from the court, and he was zoned out behind the wheel. I slid onto the seat next to him and buckled myself in. You look deep in thought, I said to him.
I should have known Wolf was in the building.
Maybe his blood vessels were expanded.
Diesel grimaced.
Or maybe he wasn't in the building. Maybe we caught him going in. Maybe he just got there.
That's a happy idea. That would make me feel much better, because the possibility that I might have lost my ability to sense Wolf depresses the crap out of me.
How did he disappear in a flash of fire?
The fire and smoke is right out of the Magic for Dummies book. Any 9-year-old kid can do it, and it creates a diversion for his exit.
Diesel rolled the engine over.
Now what?
Back to the office so I can collect my capture money.
We got to the office in less than 10 minutes due to the fact that every light was green and traffic was non-existent. Diesel parked at the curb and grinned at me.
That was pure luck, I said to him. I don't for one instant believe you can control traffic lights.
I didn't say anything.
You grinned.
We could make a bet, Diesel said.
Can I set the stakes?
He shook his head.
No, it's my ability that's called into question. I think it's fair that I set the stakes.
No way.
Afraid you'll lose?
Not willing to take a chance.
This isn't doing a lot for my ego, Diesel said.
Your ego doesn't seem especially fragile.
That doesn't mean I can't be crushed. I'm only human. Sort of.
I did a mental eye roll and got out of the car.
If you said that to a healthcare professional, they'd shoot you full of Thorazine. Hey, look who's here,
Connie said, eyeballing Diesel.
Long time no see.
Vinny stuck his head out of his inner office.
Who's here?
There are many members of my family tree who would like to take an axe to Vinny's limb. He's a decent judge of people, and that makes him a good bail bondsman. Unfortunately, he's also oily, addicted to every vice possible, and sees nothing wrong with being a sexual deviant, so his score as a human being isn't all that great.
It's Diesel, Connie said. Stephanie's friend.
So what are you doing here? Vinny asked Diesel. Are you porking her?
Not yet, Diesel said.
Why aren't you working? What do you do?
I work for the power company. I'm the guy who pushes the disconnect button.
That sounds like fun, Vinny said.
It has its moments.
I gave Connie my body receipt.
You'll never guess. Purely by accident, I ran into Hector Mendez.
I thought he was dead.
Nope, he's alive and kicking.
He's alive, but he wasn't doing much kicking after Kung Fu Princess here got done with him, Diesel said.
Huh,
Vinny said.
I bet she got him in the old Kasabas.
Gave my boys the creepy crawlies just looking at it, Diesel told him.
Gives my boys the creepy crawlies thinking she's wasting her time on Mendez, Vinny said. Mendez is Penny Annie. I need to see Munch get his shrimp ass hauled back to the slammer. I don't have Munch by the end of the month, and I'm gonna have to move to South America. I'm out Munch money and I'm in the red, and Harry don't like the color red unless it's blood.
Harry?
Diesel asked.
Harry the Hammer, his financial backer, who also happens to be his father-in-law, I offered.
Diesel smiled, and Vinny gave his head a shake, as if even after all these years he still didn't believe it. I took my capture check from Connie and dropped it into my bag. See you all tomorrow.
Yeah, Vinny said. And make sure you have Munch's body receipt next time you waltz in here.
Diesel and I left the office, and Diesel beeped the Escalade unlocked.
And you're working for him, why?
It annoys my mother. I don't have to wear pantyhose, and I'm not sure anyone else would hire me.
All good reasons.
Diesel drove us back to my apartment, and when we walked in, Carl was still watching television.
I was hoping he made dinner, Diesel said.
Do you cook?
No. Do you?
No. I can open a jar of marinara sauce, dial pizza, and I can make a sandwich.
Works for me, Diesel said. What's your choice for tonight?
Sandwich.
We worked our way through ham and cheese sandwiches, a tub of macaroni salad, and half an apple pie. We just finished the pie when Diesel's phone rang. This was cause for concern, because in the short time I'd known Diesel, his phone had never rung for anything good. He didn't get social calls, family calls, or dinner invitations.
It looked to me like only a few people had his number, and their calls were always work-related.
Yeah,
he said into the phone. He listened for a moment, told the caller he was on his way, and disconnected.
We have to hustle, he said to me. Flash is on Wolf's tail.
I grabbed my bag, and we rushed out of the apartment and ran to the Escalade. Diesel took us out of the lot to Hamilton and headed for Broad.
I had Flash watch the Ferrari, Diesel said. I knew Wolf would come back for it.
I was familiar with Flash from previous Diesel visits. From what I could tell, Flash was a nice guy who did odd jobs and had no special talents other than an ability to tolerate Diesel. He was 5'10", with spiked red hair and multiple piercings in his ears. He was slim, and at first glance looked younger than his actual age, which I thought was probably early 30s. We picked up South Broad, and Flash called in.
I'm on the outskirts of Bordentown. I'm betting he's going for the turnpike, Flash said, and disconnected. He always goes south, Diesel said to me. I got hung up in traffic on Broad Street when I was following him, and I suspected he went to the turnpike, but I couldn't catch him.
Another call came in from Flash.
We're on the turnpike going south. I can't imagine how fast he's going, but if I go any faster, my fenders will fall off. You can go home. Appreciate the effort. I'm a couple miles behind you. I'll take the turnpike and ride for a while to see if I pick up on him. To infinity and beyond, Flash said.
We stayed at it for another 20 minutes before Diesel gave up and turned around.
Wolf could be going to Atlantic City or any point in between, Diesel said. There are some goofball unmentionables in the Pine Barrens, but I can't see Wolf getting cozy with any of them. We have two people working together in the scientific community, and one of them is dead and the other missing. I'd like to know if either of them had property in South Jersey.
I don't remember seeing anything about property in South Jersey in either file.
Did Connie run Munch and Scanlon through all the programs?
No, some of those investigations take days.
Then let's go to the bonds office and see if anything else came in.
The bonds office is closed.
We'll open it.
I hate this idea. You'll trip the alarm and we'll get arrested and I'll get fired.
To begin with, I won't trip the alarm. And even if I did trip it, the bonds office is armed with range man security. Ranger isn't going to send you to jail.
True, Ranger wouldn't send me to jail, but Ranger wouldn't be happy to find me engaged in breaking and entering with Diesel, and I suspected a face-off between Diesel and Ranger would be ugly. Okay, but it'll be boring, I said. We could wait and ask Connie in the morning, and we could go back to my apartment and watch television with the monkey.
No,
Diesel said. That's it, no? What about my vote?
This is why I'm not married, Diesel said. Women make everything so friggin' complicated, and stop rolling your eyes at me.
You're staring straight ahead at the road. How do you know I'm rolling my eyes? Diesel did a full-on smile.
I don't have to look at you to know when you're rolling your eyes. You roll your eyes every time I act like a jerk.
Chapter 8. It was a dark, moonless night, and we were lost in shadow when Diesel parked the Escalade in the small lot behind the bail bonds office. I'll wait here, I told him.
This could take some time. You'll be more comfortable inside.
Are you going to be a jerk again and make me come in?
No. Are you going to drive off without me?
I hadn't intended to, but it wasn't a bad idea now that he'd planted the seed.
Well, he asked.
I'm trying to decide. He pulled the key out of the ignition and pocketed it.
Lock yourself in and lean on the horn if someone tries to steal you.
I watched him go to the back door and open it as if it hadn't been locked. He just put his hand to the doorknob and opened the door. No alarm sounded. The door closed behind Diesel, and I settled in. An hour ticked by, and the police didn't show. No range man goons arrived in SWAT gear. I reclined my seat and closed my eyes.
I was suffocating. I was struggling to come out of a deep sleep, and I was desperate for air.
I forced my eyes open and saw the problem. I was in bed, and Diesel had his arm draped across my chest again. Diesel was a big guy with a lot of muscle, and his arm weighed a ton. I thought back to the night before, and vaguely remembered falling asleep in the car. And next thing, Diesel was shuffling me into my building and into the elevator. After that, it was fuzzy. I checked around and discovered I was wearing panties and Diesel's t-shirt. That was it. Diesel was wearing less. I squirmed around trying to slide away from Diesel, but he tightened his grip and drew me closer.
Hey, I said. Hey!
He half opened his eyes and looked at me.
What?
You've got me in a death grip. I can't breathe. And what's with my clothes? I'm wearing your t-shirt.
Yeah, I didn't know what to put on you. You looked uncomfortable sleeping in your jeans and sweater and stuff.
Did you undress me? His eyes slid closed.
Wake up! I yelled at him. Now what? He said.
I don't remember a lot about last night. We didn't... I mean, you didn't...
Honey, being intimate with me is not a forgettable experience.
I guess that's good to know.
Yeah, file it for future reference. What time is it?
It's almost 8 o'clock. Diesel sighed and rolled away from me.
I hate mornings. They start so early.
I left the bed and gathered my clothes up from the floor. Did you get anything useful last night at the bonds office?
I printed out a copy of Munch's doctoral thesis, but didn't get a chance to read it. I'm hoping it'll tell me something about the theft at the research center. I'd like to know why he took the magnetometer. Nothing else local turned up on Munch. It's like he has no life. Scanlon shows some promise. His sister, Roberta Scanlon, has a house in North Philadelphia. He has a second sister, but she's like smoke. Eugene Scanlon was also heavily in debt. He defaulted on a car loan and had 2 credit cards in collection. His research isn't published, but he was Munch's project supervisor, so they had to be working in similar areas.
I carted my clothes into the bathroom and locked the door. Not that it would make a difference. I took a shower, gave my hair a 2-minute blast with the dryer, and got dressed. Diesel was sleeping when I came out. I took a moment to study him, thinking he was heart-stoppingly handsome in a rugged, outdoorsy kind of way. His initial appearance was beach bum, but I'd come to decide that was a facade. Diesel was driven by his job. The job itself was open for discussion. If he was to be believed, he was a kind of paranormal bounty hunter. I thought it was just as possible he was a contract killer or a career nutcase. I went to the kitchen and fed Rex and Carl and got coffee brewing. I dropped a bagel into the toaster and took a tub of cream cheese out of my fridge. Diesel might not be much of a cook, but he sure as heck knew how to stock a kitchen. I heard the shower running in the bathroom, and minutes later Diesel strolled in looking for coffee. He poured himself a mug and ate half my bagel.
I want to take the morning to wade through Munch's thesis, Diesel said. When I'm done with the thesis, I thought we could visit Roberta Scanlon.
Carl came into the kitchen and handed me his empty cereal box. He jumped onto the counter, got a mug out of the cupboard, and helped himself to coffee.
This apartment smells like a monkey, Diesel said.
Carl gave him the finger and went back to the television. I'm out of here, I said to Diesel. I'm taking another shot at Gordo Bolo today. This time, I'm ready. I've got a stun gun, pepper spray, and cuffs.
Kick ass, Diesel said. If you aren't home by noon, I'll have you teleported back here.
I must have looked horrified because he burst out laughing.
I'm falling in love, Diesel said. You're the only one on this earth who believes everything I say.
I tried really hard not to roll my eyes, but I couldn't help myself and rolled them anyway. I grabbed my bag and flounced out of the apartment. It wasn't so much that I believed what Diesel said. It was more that I was terrified it might be true. Lula was filing when I swung into the office.
What are you doing? I asked her.
I'm filing. What does it look like I'm doing? It's my job, you know.
You never file.
Your ass, Lula said.
I'm paying a visit to Greenblatt Produce this morning, I said. Anyone need fruit?
Hell yeah, Lula said. I'm not missing that. I was in the car when all the action went down last time.
I could happily do without that kind of action. Still, we took my Jeep just in case there was another tomato incident. Lula didn't want to veg up her Firebird. I drove to Greenblatt and parked in the lot. I got out of the Jeep and transferred the pepper spray, stun gun, and cuffs from my bag to my jeans for easier access.
Don't you worry, Lula said. If he starts something this time, you're going to have Lula there. I'll sit on Bowling Ball Head and squash him into a pancake.
Fine, just don't shoot him.
Did I say I was going to shoot him? Did you hear me say that?
I was only reminding you.
You got a thing about shooting people. I bet Diesel shoots lots of people.
Diesel doesn't carry a gun.
Get out of town.
I entered the office, said hello to the Connie clones, and went straight to the door leading to the warehouse. I walked up and down aisles formed by stacks of crates and found Bolo putting little stickers on apples.
"Look who's here," Bolo said, spotting me. "Come back for more tomatoes?"
"You need to come with me to get rescheduled." Bolo palmed an apple.
"No."
"If you hit me with that apple, I'm gonna let Lula shoot you," I said. Bolo looked past me.
"I don't see no Lula."
I turned and scanned the aisle. He was right. No Lula. "She was here a minute ago," I said.
"Well, she ain't here now."
I shouted out her name, and she rounded a stack of crated oranges at the end of the aisle.
"You looking for me?"
Lula said, her arms filled with fruit and vegetables. "Yes, I'm looking for you. You're supposed to be my backup. What are you doing?"
"I'm shopping. This place got really good produce. I got some grapefruit and an eggplant, and look at these red pears. And I got a dozen eggs. They even got fresh eggs here."
"We don't sell produce here, fatso," Bolo said. "We only distribute to stores. Put them back."
Lula's eyes bugged out of her head.
"Did you just call me fatso? Did I hear that right?"
"Yeah," Bolo said. "What of it?"
"That's a mean thing to say, and it isn't even true. I'm just a big and beautiful woman. I got more of all the good stuff than most other women, and people who have heads like bowling balls should watch what they say about other people. You're lucky I'm not a vicious person, because if I was vicious, I'd call you Coconut Head, or maybe Gordo Gourd Head."
And then Lula bounced a grapefruit off Coconut Head's forehead, and Coconut Head tagged her with the apple he'd been holding. And what happened after that was a blur of flying fruit and eggs. I had my stun gun in my hand, but it was hard to get to Bolo and dodge the fruit at the same time. I finally managed to get the prongs on him. I hit the go button, and nothing happened. No juice. Bolo shoved me away, and I lost my footing sliding on fruit slime. I grabbed a fistful of his shirt and took him down with me. I was hanging on to him, and he was trying to get away, and Lula fired off a shot to the ceiling.
"Next bullet's gonna be up your ass," Lula said to Bolo.
Bolo paused to consider that, and a rat dropped from an overhead rafter and landed inches from Lula in her red patent leather stilettos.
"Damn rats are all over the place," Bolo said.
Lula just about went white.
"I hate rats," she said. "I hate rats more than I hate monkeys."
The rat twitched, its beady black eyes blinked open, and it got to its feet.
"You just stunned him," Bolo said to Lula. "Shoot him again."
Lula took aim, and the rat charged at her. Personally, I think the rat didn't know what the heck it was doing, but Lula freaked.
"Eee!"
Lula shrieked, dancing around in her heels, arms in the air, completely apeshit. The rat scurried across Lula's foot and kept going past boxes of potatoes and beans. It took a left and headed for Pennsylvania. Bolo did the same. By the time I got to my feet and Lula stopped freaking, Bolo was long gone. A bunch of guys had gathered around us. They were throwing out comments in Spanish and laughing.
"What are they saying?" Lula wanted to know.
"I don't know," I told her. "I don't speak Spanish. The only thing I could pick out was loco."
"What are you looking at?" Lula said to the men. "Don't you have anything better to do? This place should be shut down. I'm calling the health inspector. I'm going to report this place to the fruit police."
Lula turned to me.
"And what's with you and the dud stun gun? Let me take a look at that thing."
I handed Lula the stun gun, and she tested it out on the guy next to her, who immediately collapsed into a heap on the floor and wet his pants.
"Seems to be working now," Lula said, handing the stun gun back to me.
I dropped the stun gun into my bag, Lula pocketed her Glock, and we hot-footed it out of there. We chose to leave through the loading dock exit and walk around the building rather than drip egg and melon guts on the office floor. We wiped off as best we could and climbed into my Jeep.
"You see, this is what Miss Gloria's talking about," Lula said. "I got bad juju. How else could you explain it?"
"It's not our juju," I told Lula. "It's our skill level. We're incompetent."
"I got a high skill level," Lula said. "I just shot a rat off a rafter."
"You weren't aiming for it."
"Yeah, my skill level is so high, I do things I don't even try to do."
Chapter 9. I dropped Lula at the office, drove myself home, and